Hello and welcome back to another episode of Horribly Happy. I'm your host, Jenna.
And I'm your host, Sophie.
We're back at it again this week. It is dark and early on a Monday morning for us. The sun's not even up.
This is our life right now and how busy we are.
We are
and trying to find time.
Yeah, life is crazy. All good things, just so much stuff going on. So we typically record on Sundays or Monday afternoon, and we're just like, we don't even have time for that right now. So we're just like, okay, let's do it before work Monday morning.
Great idea. Start the week off on the right foot.
Exactly. No better way to start it. We were brainstorming. Sometimes we were just like, okay, what do we want to chit chat about? We both just stared at each other. I didn't say anything. We're just like,
so tired.
Crickets.
I'm actually like an early bird, so I'm usually up at this time, but I like, just because I'm up at this time, I'm not like chatty and like whatever. I just am used to being up at this time, but I'm still not with it.
Totally. Okay, so I actually I normally have issues like not being able to wake up and like snoozing for an hour and just being really, really tired in the morning. This is actually a very exciting update.
Oh, yeah.
Went to my dentist and she was like, the grinding pattern on your teeth is concerning. Like, you're going to wear your teeth down before you're dead, essentially, before you're old. I'm like, okay. And she's like, you're probably not getting enough air at night, and that's why you're grinding. It's like some version of sleep apnea. I'm like, uh-huh. Oh, God. So I got a mouth guard to stop the grinding, LOL. And then I got mouth tape to keep my mouth shut so I have to breathe through my nose at night. And I literally shoot up in the morning.
Yeah, so I don't think we've talked about this because obviously it's not the nicest, but like I've obviously shared a bed with Jenna before and she's such a loud breather and her mouth is open. It's not a snore. It's just like a loud breath. So I'm really happy for you.
It's so gross.
It's not gross. It's just,
I don't want to be a gross sleeper.
I think most people are a gross sleeper in some capacity.
Yeah, but like people would tell me that I'd breathe out and I just like wouldn't really believe them. I'm just like, I don't really picture myself doing that. So I think you're wrong. Like the combination of mouth guard plus mouth tape, I feel like I'm getting such good sleep and I literally shoot up in the morning. Like I texted you like, okay, let's record at 7 a.m. and you're like, LOL, okay, because I feel like you're like, I can't believe she's gonna be up at that time.
Yeah, like I was kind of shocked that you suggested that, because yeah, like I said, like I'm an early riser, but you're typically not as early as me, but you're not like, I sleep until noon every day.
Right. No. But yeah, I just like feel like so much better. So anyways, I'll keep y'all updated, but it feels good to sleep well.
So did you surprisingly snooze?
Well, yeah, I still snooze, but it's like snoozes instead of 10 snoozes. Still getting off of that habit. But I got Zach for Christmas a Hatch alarm clock.
Because do you like it?
He also has issues snoozing. So it's just like literally back and forth snoozing for an hour between the two of us.
I know, yeah, that blows my mind.
I really like it. And Zach says it's helped him wake up as well. So it's just like, I mean, I don't know if it's worth the price.
Uh-huh.
I got it on a Black Friday sale.
Okay.
So I think it would be worth it, like if it was what I paid for it, but it's like $120 or something like that normally for essentially just like having like a noise progression and light progression in the morning. So it like slowly wakes you up. Mm-hmm. You can upgrade a monthly amount to have like a nighttime routine as well. It's like, okay, I just paid so much and then I have to upgrade to that subscription.
I hate subscriptions.
It's like not worth it. But yeah, if I were to get one on my side, I would probably get something similar, but like the cheaper version, just for the noise and light progression, because I do like that.
The subscription stuff is so hard for me for products. It like really makes or breaks. If like a product only has a subscription option, like you said,
Right.
you can add a subscription. And like there's stuff, there's things that make sense, like Peloton subscription, like you get a bunch of
Yeah.
classes and stuff like that. But like something like that to have a subscription, it's like, no, like just let me pay a one-time fee of $50 to have this
Right.
additional enhancements. It's like,
It's like, no, I literally paid $150 for this hatch. I didn't pay that for Zach, but I think I paid 80. It's still kind of a lot.
for an alarm clock, yes,
Oh,
that
yeah.
feels like a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's like more than that, but
No, it's
when you break
pretty
it
much
down,
just an alarm
just an
clock.
alarm clock.
All right, so we have an announcement to make. It ties into why we're recording so early. Clearly, we are so busy right now, and we love this pod. We want to make sure we're putting quality work in. So we, starting this week, are going to be releasing pods bi-weekly instead of weekly. Hopefully to allow us to put more quality research in and just find more times to record with the craziness of our lives. So that's the plan right now, bi-weekly. So instead of an epi coming out every week, it'll be every 2 weeks. So today, this is released on the 11th. The next one will be the 25th. So that's the plan. We'll be in your ear bi-weekly now instead of weekly. And we still love you.
We do still love you. It's just madness. Like Jenna said, it's all good stuff, but it feels like impossible right now. And I think we both thought lives would slow down after the holidays, and it doesn't appear that way. So, yeah, we just need to reprioritize for now.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Yep,
we'll
we
keep you
both have
updated.
full-time jobs, as I've stated before. Sometimes we need to put our priorities elsewhere. We both just bought houses. Sophie's traveling so much for work. Yeah. So you'll still hear from us. So it's all good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the update.
Yes. All right. So let's get into the Idaho murders update.
Yeah.
This past week, the affidavit was released on why they arrested Brian Koberger, whatever his last name is.
Yeah, Kohlberger.
So an affidavit is essentially a document that you put together for the judge, and it says
To
like
issue
why.
like an arrest warrant.
Yeah, to
Yeah.
issue an arrest warrant, like why are you arresting this person? So it's like 18 pages long. I read it. Did you read through it, or did you just hear a summary?
No, I read it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just gonna like briefly go through what it entailed in the affidavit, and then we can talk about like reactions and whatnot after.
So, what I found to be the most interesting is that they had kind of narrowed down him as a suspect so much earlier than I think anyone in the public or outside law enforcement knew.
Yes.
It essentially is that there was a knife sheath left at the crime scene, which I think was kind of the starting point for them to narrow down a suspect because they were able to get DNA off of it. They also had video footage of the white Hyundai Elantra, which paired with the knife sheath was kind of like the most damning evidence against Brian Kohlberger and his
Yes.
arrest.
Okay, so that was the start of it. I have like
Yeah.
a point by point here too. So keep going
Okay.
and then I'll fill it in.
Yeah. So I think, once they had this Hyundai Elantra on camera that they wanted to kind of look into more. And they were able to figure out that Brian Kohlberger drove that and he was the owner of said car that they were looking into. They essentially followed him and were able to collect, actually, I think it was his father's DNA
Yeah, it
because
was.
Because Brian Koberger would like wear gloves, and he was very careful about disposing of things after the murder, which also just appears to be pretty guilty. Like, you don't typically wear gloves everywhere you go, like to the grocery store or running quick errands, and he was disposing of trash in not his trash bins.
Right. So these murders happened in Idaho. His family lives in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And so he goes to school.
Right.
He goes to school and lives in Washington.
Right outside of Idaho.
Yep.
So he was back home in Pennsylvania, and he was being surveilled there. So they went into the trash, and you can go into trash. Like, you don't need a search warrant. Police don't need a search warrant to go into trash in most states. And they got DNA and did a test, and it said the murderer from the snap on the sheath, the DNA from the snap on the sheath, was the son of who they collected the DNA from.
Like 99.99999% match.
So here's the key takeaways from the affidavit. So the DNA found on the sheath, which was under the button, snap. This was a very shocking part of the affidavit. One of the surviving roommates saw the murderer through her door. She actually heard things three times. At first, she thought it was one of her roommates playing with their dog.
Mm-hmm.
Then she thought she heard somebody, one of the roommates, say, like,
someone's here.
Someone's here. And then a male voice responded, I'm trying to help you, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she opened the door a third time, and she saw a man dressed in all black with a mask covering his nose and mouth with bushy eyebrows walk right by her and out the sliding glass door.
Mm-hmm.
So a figure in clad black clothing and a mask. And we'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm.
So the white sedan was surveilled, and then it talks about how that white sedan was actually seen multiple times on CCTV footage and going to the house right before the murders and then after the murders, speeding away. So that sedan was, or the Elantra was on alert, definitely. Mm-hmm. So there was multiple people reporting seeing that sedan on Brian's campus. So that's probably how they traced it back. I also heard that the police like asked the campus for like car makes and models of all their students, and they like narrowed it down to his car.
Mm-hmm.
So then the white Elantra is tracked back to his parents' house. And then also a big part of this affidavit was the suspect's cell phone records and where it was pinging towers. And it shows that it pinged near the victim's house like 12 times before the murders, like through. So it shows signs of stalking.
It was premeditated for sure.
Yeah. And then the pings on the tower show that he's driving near the murders, like right before, and then his phone turns off. Mm-hmm. And then 2 or 3 hours later after the murders, the phone turns on again, which is super sus.
And actually pings the house the next morning too.
Yeah. So like 9 a.m. the next morning, it pings near the house too. So it looks like he went back. Some people are speculating possibly for the sheath that he forgot.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows, obviously. So those are the main takeaways from the affidavit. That's just the affidavit. There's going to be so much more evidence when this goes to trial.
Mm-hmm.
But what really set the internet into an uproar was the surviving victim that saw Brian that night, or allegedly Brian.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, the police weren't called until, what was it, like 11 or 12?
I think noon is what they've said.
Yeah. So it's like, people are like, why would she not call the police?
Mm-hmm.
And really blaming her, and actually making allegations, or, you know, false, or who knows, but they're making allegations that she was in on it as well. It's just crazy. It's so dumb. It's like, you don't know. She's a victim. Like, let's blame the person that's arrested right now, the probable person, like, who knows? Like, you see somebody walk by you with a knife and a mask, and you're like, what are you gonna do? Go fight him? Like, yeah. Some people are speculating that maybe she passed out. The 911 call the next day. There was two surviving victims, and they had a hard time conveying what was going on. So they eventually get out. Somebody passed out. Some people are thinking that this surviving witness victim actually saw him and connected like what was happening, maybe saw blood and passed out, or they froze and locked themselves in their room. Like, you can't blame somebody for seeing a murderer and then not doing anything. Like, what are you supposed to do in that scenario?
Yeah. So hindsight is really 20/20 here. Like, we know what happened in this house because of said intruder that was seen. There's so much we don't know. We don't know, like, if she even registered that he had a knife, if she even saw any evidence of a murder or violence. I mean, this is a college house. Who knows if she was under the influence? It's like, there's just so many things we don't know.
Can I touch on the college house real quick? Yeah. That's actually something I was going to point out too, is like, I lived in a college house with four girls. You lived in a big house. Your mm-hmm. friends lived nearby. You were always popping in and out. Mm-hmm. This college house, they all went out the night before. They're probably mm-hmm. drinking, whatever. That's mm-hmm. totally normal within a college life. I had people in and out of my house all the time. Mm-hmm. I heard roommates' boyfriends in the basement. Like, I just, like, I heard so much stuff that, like, I don't know if I heard, like, a guy say, I'm trying to help you, I would mm-hmm. register, like, oh, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, in this house now as an adult, yeah, not in my college house, though.
Right. Totally. I think everyone has different college experiences, but, like, hearing noises and crying,
yes.
dogs barking. It's like, that is just all part of the weekend college experience, at least in my experience. And under no circumstances would I immediately think it was because my four roommates were being murdered that I was hearing these noises. So there's just so much we don't know. There is no one to blame for this tragedy except for the murderer. And I just feel really bad for the surviving roommates. I really hope that they can, get to some spot of peace and have grace on themselves and hopefully block out a lot of the criticism from the media coming their way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if it's the media. I guess I don't really pay attention to, like, super mainstream media. Just, like, these people on TikTok are so freaking
social media. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Like, they are so crazy. It's like, I saw somebody comment, like, I can't wait for the made for TV movie about this. It's like, literally, fuck you. Mm-hmm. This is real people's lives. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot of people are invested in this because it's just so shocking, but mm-hmm. it really grinds my gears seeing some of the stuff that's being said. So anyways, we'll keep updating as more stuff comes out. Wishing peace to victims' families and surviving victims as well. And
if you're someone who is
blame their way.
If you are someone who is speculating on social media, stop that right now.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to be, like, shocked by this and, like, interested in it because, mm-hmm. you know, it's all over the news, whatever, but, like, to throw blame on people and you don't even know all of the evidence, it's really mm-hmm. weird.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So that's my weekly rant.
Yep. That's the updates we have so far.
What are you, hard pivot, what are you watching as of late?
Yes. So over our little holiday break, I had a lot of free time, which was awesome. And I did indulge in binging some shows. I have finished both seasons of White Lotus, which I feel like everyone's talking about. Very good
Everyone
show.
Everyone has.
But Jenna has not finished, so I can't dive deep into anything. She's barely even started, actually.
I've watched two episodes. I'm intrigued. It's very awkward to watch.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny you say that, because so my good college friend Hannah, I was like telling her, I was like, you need to watch White Lotus. And essentially we did a trade-off. She's like, I'll watch White Lotus, but you need to watch the show Yellow Jackets. I'm like, great. Okay. So like I watched that show, she watches White Lotus, and she said the same thing. She's like, it's so awkward. Like, I don't hate it, but I don't love it. It just makes me feel uncomfortable. And I'm like, yeah, but you have to like lean into it. It's like kind of like Schitt's Creek when you first start and you like can't really understand the humor.
Yeah.
But then once you start like leaning into it and just like letting it go, you're like, wait, that's really funny. That's kind of how I describe the vibe of White Lotus.
I am getting there. Like, I'm totally getting there. And I'm really excited for season two, because there's a lot of actors and actresses that I'm like very interested in watching.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to love it. This is how I am. I just like, I don't watch shows for so long, and then one day I'll just like binge. Like I don't watch a lot of TV, not like a soft brag, like not a brag at all. Like I just like mm-hmm. on TikTok all the time, which was mm-hmm. way worse. So I just like one day, one Sunday coming up, I'm just going to binge everything, and then we mm-hmm. can chat about it.
Yeah. But I did watch the first season, which is the only season out right now, of the show called Yellow Jackets, and it's on Showtime, so it's like kind of hard to get to. But I think it's one of like the best shows I've watched in a long time. It was so captivating. Like, you don't have any urge to like go on your phone or be distracted by anything else. And essentially the premise is like, takes place in the 90s, high school girl soccer team makes it to nationals. And on their flight to nationals, their plane crashes in the Canadian wilderness. And it kind of just starts following like what's happening to them, how are they going to survive? And there's like so many twists and turns and so many storylines. And it also kind of pops back and forth to present day and, the crash. So it is very good, in my opinion. I can't wait for season two, comes out in March, and they've already been renewed for season three. So I highly recommend, if you have access to Showtime. I think the genre is technically just like mystery, so it can be a little spooky or kind of scary at times, but it is so good.
I really want to watch. I do. So Jenny, Sophie's mom, might hit you up for your Showtime login.
I'll send you the digits. I'll send you the guts.
Sounds awesome. I will one of these days just dive into my binging era.
Yeah, you have to finish White Lotus. This will be the caveat. You have to finish White Lotus before I give you the information.
I did watch. Okay, I have watched two movies in the past.
Oh, okay.
Like 2 weeks, which is very unlike me. I'm like not a big movie buff.
Yeah, me neither.
I watched Knives Out Glass Onion. And I did not watch the first Knives Out. And I've heard it's much better. So I want to go back and watch the first Knives Out. Okay. I was entertained by Glass Onion. I wouldn't say it was like amazing.
Okay.
People love it. It was like good.
I watched Knives Out, and I did think that was a really good movie, but I have not watched Glass Onion.
Okay. Yeah. I think I need to watch the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a type of movie. I guess I'm like used to watching like realism movies, and this was like not a realistic movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. And then the other movie I watched was The Chef. No, sorry, The Menu.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it with my little sister. She came to visit, and it was, again, not rooted in like realism at all, but it's like a satire horror movie.
Okay.
So it is scary, but it's like rooted in satire. So it's like kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was good. I liked it better than Glass Onion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I love the show Chef's Table, where okay. it's like a cinematic experience, like going into food and like whatever. It's like,
yeah.
Like if you know, it's like a very high production and it's like the plating, and then it goes into like the different, what goes into it, and like just shows the chef putting it together. It's like very cinematic.
Okay.
Part of this, the chef movie was like a play on Chef's Table.
So
just like so weird. Do you know anything about the movie though?
No.
Okay. Essentially like a high, very, very high end chef has a dinner party and like serves okay. people the best meal of their life with the intention okay. of killing everybody at the end.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. All right. And then my other update is I am reading A Court of Thorn and Roses.
Mm.
Same with shows where I kind of just like binge all at once. Reading, I'm very similar. Like I might not read for like a week and then I'll just like binge on one day. So I'm like 3/4 of the way done through the book. I'm absolutely loving it. Ooh. It's a series. It's like fairy lore. But it's,
yes, this is what Hannah recommended, right?
So, yeah. Well, okay. It's like all over book talk.
Oh, okay.
It is so good. I am obsessed.
So I have to check it out.
It's like good escapism as well, because it's like not, you know, like you're not reading about like real people, really.
Yeah. Like right.
Kind of like Game of Thrones-esque, but
well, it's like got to be kind of fantasy fairy. Then.
It is fantasy. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, really good.
What it's is it called again?
Fantasy fiction. A Court of Thorn and Roses is the first book.
Okay. Very all nice.
Right. Shall we get into the stories?
Yes.
All right. My story, my horrible story, is about the Dakota 38+2. I found out about this story because it actually happened in Minnesota. There was a ride to memorialize what happened. And the Governor Walz was there. And then this TikToker I follow that like just he like features like stuff about Minnesota history, like all like cool places, whatever. So he went and like covered it as well. And I'll go into just like a brief summary and then the main gist, or I'll go in deeper as well. So on December 10th, 2022, so this past December, riders embarked on the last year of their wintry trek to remember those hanged on December 26, 1862 in Mankato, Minnesota, upon President Abraham Lincoln's order. So this execution served as the U.S. government's punishment of the Dakota people for their uprising in the Dakota War of 1862. So this is Native Americans, mm-hmm. Or Native people, the Dakota tribe. And also, as I go through this story, I'll do my best on pronunciation, and I apologize for mispronunciations. So prior to the execution, the military held 498 Dakota men prisoners for raids on settler villages in the area. The trials took place, but there was no representation, no preparation, and numerous communication barriers. So ultimately, 38 men paid the price of the war in the largest mass execution in U.S. history, and another 2 men were later captured and hanged as well. So that's a brief summary on what happened. I had no idea this happened, let alone in Mankato, Minnesota, in our backyard, literally an hour from us.
Mm-hmm.
My sources today are nativehope.org and keyc.com. So in 2005, Jim Miller, who is a Dakota out of Porcupine, South Dakota, had a dream. He dreamt of riding horseback across the plains of South Dakota to the riverbank in Minnesota, where in his dream, he witnessed his Dakota relatives being executed. Jim's vision inspired him. So he had like a really, really, you know, graphic dream about this.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted various horse riders to come together for a 16-day reconciliation ride, now known as the Dakota 38 Memorial Ride. Each December 10th, riders set out to traverse the 330 miles between Lower Brule, South Dakota, and Mankato, Minnesota. So let's go back and understand the Dakota Uprising more. In 1851, the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux restricted the Dakota Sioux land in Minnesota to a strip of land to a near 20 miles wide and 150 miles long. The Dakota endured a tremendous land loss of millions of acres. Before this, the Dakota tribe controlled an area roughly the size of the state of New York, which included woodlands, river valleys, and lush prairies. With more and more settlers pushing their way west, the U.S. government bargained its way into control of most of the Dakota's territory, reducing their hunting and foraging grounds to barely anything. All 8,000 Dakota were to survive off of the tiny strip left over after they sold their land for about 12 cents an acre, which was not a lot, even back then.
Yeah.
Historical land loss is more profound than the physical land that was lost. It also is a loss of sustenance, culture, language, and life itself for the Dakota people. By placing a limit on the amount of land and natural resources Indigenous people may, quote unquote, own in the U.S., it made the Dakota transform their lifestyle from that of a nomadic, self-sustaining people with land-based cultural practices into more sedentary, dependent, and assimilated lifestyle. You know, Dakota people used to live off the land and like travel throughout their area, and it was very nomadic. And, you know, now this small area made it very sedentary.
Mm-hmm.
Changes forced upon the Dakota caused starvation, which gave way to anger. Access to hunting and gathering sites decreased, crop failures, and payments based on treaties with the U.S. government were delivered late due to the priority of funding the Civil War. So they weren't even getting paid for their land.
Mm-hmm.
In desperation and determination to restore the ancestral hunting grounds to feed their people, a group of Dakota-led series of attacks on neighboring settling communities, and this gave way to the Dakota War of 1862. Several attacks on settling communities and military forts occurred during the fall of 1862. Dakota Chief Little Crow said that to Colonel Henry Sibley that he would release the captured settlers if the U.S. addressed all of the issues that they had. So there was a battle of Wood Lake, and some Dakotas fled, others surrendered to Sibley, and Sibley is the U.S. colonel. Sibley said he would not punish those who attacked the settlers if they, you know, fled to him.
Okay.
However, the remaining Dakota, majority were non-combatant, were forced to march 150 miles, arriving at Fort Snelling on November 14th. A military commission held trials for 498 Dakota men. 333 were initially sentenced to death. Their crimes were ranged from rape to murder. And the trial conditions were highly unjust. There was no explanation of the trial process. There were no attorneys of those who tried, and some trials were less than 5 minutes long. Yeah. Many Dakota could not communicate across the language barrier, and there was very little evidence presented at each individual crime. President Abraham Lincoln personally reviewed the sentences, and 38 men were found guilty of war crimes. The 38 men were hanged on December 26, 1862, in the largest mass execution in U.S. history. There were more than 4,000 people in attendance, and they cheered when the hangings were done. So gross. And also, I know Abe Lincoln has like looked at this like great historical figure in history, and he is for some reasons, but this is really a dark stain on his legacy. Yeah,
for sure.
Another
and this stuff is like sorry, this stuff is like often so overlooked because people just like attribute to him
Oh my gosh,
to,
yeah.
yeah.
I mean, this was literally in our backyard and I didn't know about this. Did you know
Right.
about this?
No.
Yeah, I mean,
Embarrassed
what
to
was it?
say I didn't.
I didn't even learn, like, I went to school for so, like, my whole life in Minnesota, never
Yeah.
brought up in one single class.
Right.
It's just crazy. So there were two other men that were captured later and hanged as well, as mentioned before. The remaining 1,600 Dakota, mostly women, children, and elders, remained in U.S. custody on Pikes Island as prisoners of war. They lived in deplorable conditions, and at least 300 died between the winter of 1862 and 1863. In April of 1868, Congress delivered a final blow to the Dakota and abolished their reservation. The Dakota became a people without a home. Next, the government shuffled the imprisoned around the Nebraska's territory. A majority of them headed on a steamboat to Fort Thompson in South Dakota, which would become the Crow Creek Indian Reservation. Most of the men were jailed in Iowa for several years, and others were sent to Nebraska. 2,000 Dakota women and children faced difficult conditions, often walking for long stretches without proper clothing and shoes. The Ho-Chunk, who had not been a part of the war, faced removal too, as the U.S. took their homelands as well. So that's a different tribe.
Okay.
And they weren't even a part of the war.
Yeah.
Trista Gonzalez, a member of the Crow Creek Sioux tribe, is a descendant of those held in the winter between 1862 and 1863 in Mankato, Minnesota. She shared the story of her Unsi, her great grandmother, five times removed, who endured the winter march while carrying a baby. And Trista's great grandmother was in her womb. As Trista shared her story, grief for her Dakota relatives unexpectedly overwhelmed her, and she wept for her ancestors. She went on to share details of the journey. The march was brutal, the conditions harsh. Women, children, and elders made their way during the duress of fear. Fear that if a child cried, a soldier would remove him from the group and kill him with the butt of his gun. Fear that their limbs would not survive the frostbite. Fear of their fate. Trista's grandmother survived, and her child lived to be 104. However, the
Hi.
trauma of their survival lived on as well.
Yeah.
So, when asked why the ride is important, another member said, Wilfred Keeble said, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, historical trauma, intergenerational trauma, there are so many words to describe it. It's more or less the effects of colonization. Most members of the tribe, including Trista, have been coming to terms with what happened in the past and why there are problems in their community today and how they interrelate. 2022 was the last year of this ride. The last four senior riders on the original ride will be retiring, which will mark the end of the Dakota 38 plus 2 Memorial Ride. So they are retiring the ride. It did go on for many years since 2005, so it's pretty cool. I saw videos of the day. They marched right down to Mankato, Minnesota, right in the heart of the downtown where the executions took place. I believe there is a memorial there for it now, and it was like a big celebration of like Dakota people, just people in Mankato, just people from Minnesota. Like I said, the governor went. There was a lot of celebration and honor placed upon these people. And I did read a statement from the governor explaining how this is like a really dark stain on Minnesota's history and how, you know, there will be like this will be memorialized and, you know, it's not something to just wash over.
Like recognized, talked about, and then memorialized for. Wow. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know anything about that. I've only been to Mankato a couple times, but that would have been really cool to see. I'm glad that like locals came out for it as well and like
Yeah.
many participated.
Next time I'm in Mankato, I want to go to
Yeah.
Memorial for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Wow, fascinating.
it feels so long ago.
Yeah.
I just realized like history is like, it's so not long ago. Like, I don't know. Like,
No.
it's really crazy. But yeah, really sad story, but a cool thing that the Dakota tribe has been doing the last however many years.
Yeah. And you said by horseback, right?
Yeah, by horseback. It's a
That's
13-day
nuts.
journey.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like, I wouldn't have known about this unless they did this ride. So it is, making
Yes.
waves and bringing awareness to it for
Yes.
sure.
Very cool that they do that.
Yeah. I
Wow,
do
interesting
hope that
story.
like maybe in the future somebody like restarts it again.
I know you were saying like they were retiring. I was like, oh, I wonder if anyone will like pick up where they left off or do
Right.
something else, kind of spin it into something else. I mean, that's like a very tragic, and I'm glad it's recognized. It's just kind of crazy stuff you don't learn in school for however many years, and you
Yeah.
learn it now, and it's like
Alarming.
embarrassing. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, a lot I didn't know, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll have some good pictures on Instagram as well if you guys want to go take a look at that.
Okay, so we're gonna pivot now to our happy story. My only source this week is www.euronews.com. And this article was written by Rebecca Ann Hughes, and I'm going to talk about the coins that are thrown into the Trevi Fountain and like
Oh, cute.
what they're done with. So the Trevi Fountain, which you have not been to Italy, right?
No,
Okay.
unfortunately. I would like to honeymoon there.
Yes, it's so romantic. I like pre-traveled there when I studied abroad. And I went with like essentially eight strangers, which was like amazing. But I'm like, oh my gosh, it'd be so great to come back here with like the love of my life. It's just like so
Yes.
romantic. Okay, anyway, so I have seen the Trevi Fountain. The Trevi Fountain collects over 1 million euro every year from visited wishes, which that is nuts to me. I did
Holy
not know.
shit.
But where does this money go? So, built between 1732 and 1762, the Trevi Fountain is one of Rome's most iconic sights. It was designed by Nicola Salvi and represents the taming of the waters. Against a monumental facade of giant Corinthian pilasters, river god Oceanus, I think is how you pronounce it, rides a shell chariot. This is a tongue
That's a
twister. Okay.
mouthful.
River god Oceanus rides a shell chariot pulled by seahorses.
Okay.
One of the creatures is docile, while the other roars loudly, representing the contrast between characters of the sea. Tradition has tourists standing with their backs facing the monument and tossing a coin over their left shoulder with their right hand into the water. Also, made well here. The ritual was made famous by the 1954 film Three Coins in the Fountain and is supposed to guarantee the visitors' return to the Eternal City. I was going to say also made famous by the Lizzie
I was
McGuire
literally just gonna say that.
movie. Okay.
Slay, Lizzie. Lizzie and
So,
Paolo.
Paolo. Okay, so each day about 3,000 euros end up in the fountain, totaling up to about 1.5 million euros each year. So a couple times each year, the city sends in a team to collect the fortune. Workers use brushes on the end of long poles to sweep up the coins into piles and then use a suction hose to extract the money from the water. The coins are then bagged under the presence of the city police. In 2001, the mayor decided that money should be collected for a local charity to put a stop to the frequent attempts by people to steal coins from the fountain, which, like, yeah, if I knew that much was sitting in the Trevi Fountain. I was
literally just going to say, like, is there security?
Yeah, so I think, like, when they're under collection, there's, like, a lot of security around.
But, like, prior, like, at night or whatever, you know?
Like, I don't know. It's so crazy there. I mean, there has to be. Like, I was there and no one was, like, in the water, which maybe at night people do it when there aren't so many people around, but it's so busy there. I just right. think that if someone tried to do something, at the very least civilians would be like, stop. But I don't remember presence of, like, local police force. And okay. I could just be misremembering. It was so busy. And that was, like, so long ago. Okay, so the mayor decided that the money should be collected. Okay, so since then, the loose change that ends up in the fountain has been donated each year to Rome's Catholic charity, Caritas. The donated sum now makes up 15% of its annual budget, which is kind of nuts for this charity. They, like, really rely on this donation, which is awesome. Yeah.
What does the charity do?
The money is used to help to fund soup kitchens, homeless shelters, free supermarkets, and helps upkeep of a complex on the outskirts of Rome, housing a nursing home, canteen, and dentist for city residents living in poverty. So
that's very cool.
Yeah, it's used for a lot of different things. It's distributed among a lot of different things, but it is given to Rome's Catholic charity, which, I mean, makes sense. It's Rome. So, yeah, I just thought that was really cool. I never thought about it.
No, that is extremely cool.
I'm really happy they use it for good, or at least attempting to use it for good and not just, like,
yeah, and it's like going back towards, like, this the less privileged in the city. Like, mm-hmm. that's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, good chunk of change. So
yeah. Not bad.
I did throw a coin in the Trevi Fountain, so hopefully that went to somewhere good. But yeah, that's my cutesy story about the coins in the Trevi Fountain.
Obsessed. Well, it definitely was a good palate cleanser for my story and also the Idaho murders as well. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Everybody else, everybody listening, have a great rest of your week. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yes.
We love you and stay happy.
As happy as you can be. Bye. Bye.